Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Can you hear me, Doug?
Oh, now I hear you. Do you hear me?
There we are. Excellent. Yeah. So, we haven't used this in a bit, but a little bit of a learning curve getting back onto the old radio show flow. It's been what, probably 3-4 years now, Doug, right?
I remember the radio show for like maybe about three, four days before 2016.
So this must be good luck.
But I don't explicitly remember one since, so maybe that's just because I kind of blocked those out, because apparently radio shows are jinxes, and I've just, forgotten about the ones that didn't go well.
Yeah,
so.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. I think there's probably been a bunch of radio shows we've done with weather systems that we choose to forget about. But I think 2016 was the most recent one. Anyway, we're glad to be here. I hope everyone can hear us. So if you're in the thread on 33 and Rain or if you're listening elsewhere, shoot us a text or let us know that you can hear us, because we're just going to roll in here and open things up for some conversation and comments as well. One of the cool things that we're going to do after we get through the initial comments and we get into the GFS model is we're going to post the call-in number for questions. So if people do want to call in and get involved, they're more than welcome to do that. And we're going to open things up and kind of have some fun with this. Okay, so we're glad to have everyone here. First of all, super grateful to Pat and Jeff and 33 and Rain for letting us do this, and also for maintaining that forum. It really is an awesome place to discuss the weather. Really good group of people, and it's been fun. It's obviously the last couple of days have been just exceptional. And a lot of times, what goes into running a website or a web forum gets overlooked for periods of downtime during the summer or when there's quiet winters. And all of a sudden, you expect to be there during things like this, which is potential for a big storm. And so I just want to give a virtual hat tip to them for keeping that place running for so long. So that's what I wanted to start with. And then obviously excited to talk about the weather models that come in tonight. We have quite a interesting scenario developing in us here over the next couple of days that includes possibility of a significant winter storm for a large majority of the Northeast states. But even with that in mind, there's still quite a bit of uncertainty. We have some model data that is still further east and largely a graze or a mist for some of the I-95 corridor and the coastal regions. And then we have the other data, including obviously the European and most recently the AMRON, which we'll dive in, that is much further west and wrapped up and close to the coast, and obviously would bring this event into the upper echelon of potential winter storm type events that we've experienced. So a lot to go through tonight and discuss. I think one of the great things about these radio shows is we can really dive into the models, and then once the GFS comes out and we have the RGM coming soon, we can really kind of dive into them as they come out. So Doug, with that, what are your thoughts on the NAM? I wanted to give you the floor for that, because I actually did not watch it now. I'm just getting a look at it now, and I saw some of your comments on it. So tell us about the 0D NAM, your thoughts, what you think it looks like compared to other guidance, and where it was heading after the run completed at hour 84.
Well, my favorite thing is analyzing the long-range NAM. Having any excuse to dive into the long-range NAM is the greatest thing ever.
I'm laying out the platform for you to do it.
Yeah. So with that said, I guess when I'm looking at the models and the trends, I'm looking at the Southern Stream and the Northern Stream alignment, and not necessarily one feature in and of itself, because I think the two features are somewhat interconnected, as Dual Jet, the poster in the forum, implied earlier. So the Southern Stream actually, you know, it continued to trend a lot faster. And fortunately, that's been a trend on the NAM throughout the last few runs, especially going back to 6Z. But initially, the Northern Stream was a little less meridional. But I think that's partly because the Southern Stream was so fast. But then what ended up happening was, we just got really, really good alignment, absolutely ideal alignment at hour 66. Like, there is essentially no vorticity left behind. And, of course, you know, we can still get, I think, a pretty good snowstorm, perhaps even a major snowstorm, even if a little bit of vorticity is left behind. But what stood out to me about this run is that pretty much all of the vorticity got scooped up by the Northern Stream. And then from that point, it's really like the event is almost ceilingless once that occurs. And I think what's also interesting is just how tight and compact the trough becomes so quickly. And that's partly why you're able to get such due south to north meridional flow up and down the whole coast. And that's how you're able to get snow breaking out inland a little bit more quickly. I think if you look at hour 84, even note how in D.C., the flow, the wind barbs at 500 millibars are kind of from southeast to northwest. So that kind of also helps to align the positive vorticity advection from southeast to northwest inland, and that's how you're able to get good snow. Whereas on the 18Z GFS at hour 90, you're not getting that backed up flow at 500 millibars. The wind barbs are much more just kind of southwest and northeast, and you're not getting that backed up flow from southeast to northwest until you're reaching near Montauk. And I think a lot of that is, again, because of just how compact the trough was right from the get-go. And those little intricacies regarding exactly how compact the trough gets upon the phase, admittedly, I don't have as much of a clear handle on. I think that's going to come down to a lot of intricate details that are kind of hard to see in the broad synoptic sense. But, you know, regardless, though, the NAM is pretty much as ideal as it gets with the storm.
So, I mean, you're just looking at them compared to other guidance, like you said, compared to the GFS, I think, you know, we go back to that main discussion about the two streams, and I wanted to get your opinion, and maybe not technically two streams, but two different disturbances. I wanted to get your opinion on the relationship between the two. You and I had a constructive discussion about this before, and one of the things that when I look at the different weather models, guidance moving forward that I have a little bit of a concern with is the sensitivity of that initial disturbance that dives down into the Four Corners region. Now, I know that the GFS, for example, has been trending better with that. And for people who are listening and learning, that initial disturbance that drives down to the Four Corners region, a lot of model guidance for the past couple of days has gone back and forth as to whether it will kind of hung up in that area in Colorado and New Mexico. If that happens, the secondary disturbance that comes down from Minnesota and down to the Great Lakes, it almost doesn't have as much vorticity to phase with, and the kind of phasing interaction then changes. And sometimes you have a more progressive solution the more that initial disturbance hangs back in the Rockies on Thursday. So the European has been more progressive with that disturbance, which allows the phase to be cleaner and generally result in a more substantial storm. Well, GFS, the past really 2 days up until today, has insisted that disturbance would kind of hang back more over New Mexico or even push into parts of Arizona on the earlier GFS runs. So in the last 12 to 24 hours, the GFS has come east with that a bit. It's been a little bit more progressive run to run, while the European has backed it up a little bit. So there's almost like some convergence going on with that. But still, at the end of the day, we have a situation where the European itself is way more wrapped up than the GFS model. The GFS is still, even though it is flying towards Europe, still a great solution to a lot of I-5 at the moment. And so, you know, the question becomes, what is the interaction between those two disturbances? You know, is there a point where if the European model continues to slightly back that disturbance up, where we're going to start to look at the possibility of it slipping to the east? And is there a point where if the GFS continues to trend more progressive, all of a sudden it's going to jack up and come closer to the coast? So I guess I just wanted to get your opinion on that, kind of open discussion on the relationship between those two disturbances.
So the quick answer to both those questions is yes, assuming the other feature doesn't change. So
right.
The southern, you know, there is a point where with the southern stream, if it gets held back and the northern stream is not, I guess, compensating for that, then yes, you are, you know, then there is a very, the sensitivity does significantly increase and you do run the risk that this becomes maybe just kind of a grazer or even a miss. And then, but conversely, that, you know, if the southern stream trends faster and the northern stream does not trend more progressively, then in that case, the GFS is very, very close to showing a bomb. I just think that the two entities are somewhat, maybe not completely, but somewhat intertwined, which is why I don't necessarily think we can say, okay, the southern stream is going west, and that in and of itself is a quote-unquote bad thing, because I think some of the reasons why the southern stream could hang back further west is a byproduct of the northern stream being a bit more meridional in the first place. And then in the long run, that allows the inflection point to come further west and gives you a little bit more room for error for a phase further west, and then you can still get a big storm. So I think there's room for error because of the fact that the two streams are intertwined, the relationship is intertwined. Having said that, they're probably not completely intertwined. There probably is a little bit of room for independence, a little bit of room for the southern stream to trend west at the expense of the northern stream. So in that regard, there is still a little bit of that east slipping risk. But I think what helps, if you're looking for snow, is the fact that the relationship is somewhat intertwined, so that if the southern stream is further west, it could mean that the northern stream is actually better.
Well said. I think you bring up a lot of good points, because we've seen, you know, on the European guidance, for example, that the southern disturbance has trended slower, but the northern stream has trended better. And so the result is almost a cleaner phase and further west compared to, you know, what you might expect, which would be that it would actually be worse. I think where my hesitation is with this is that at some point, if you take that southern disturbance so far back, right, if you keep taking it back, it's almost comparable to, like, you're pushing it closer and closer to the edge, right? And you can keep saving it, and then eventually at some point, it gets so far back, it's almost kind of like, it's not completely, but to help illustrate, it's sort of starting to become buried under the ridge. It goes west of the gradient between the ridge and the incoming northern stream disturbance. And so when that happens, in my eyes, you then run the risk of leaving some very important vorticity behind. And then you start talking about the possibility that even though the northern stream might come down in phase with whatever there, you are looking at the possibility of a later and sloppier phase, which for people in New York City is not going to cut it. It might cut it for people in Boston, but if your phase is later and sloppier because some of the important vorticity is left behind and dragged along the Gulf, almost like sheared out along the Gulf of Mexico like that, you're opening the possibility of a later phase and something that's a little more positively open that might not be as favorable for some people. And so I think that's where I'm wondering is, I agree with most of what you're saying. I just think there is a point where this would start to slip, and I'm just not sure what it is. But if those trends continue with that southern disturbance going further and further back, I think we'd start to approach the point where it would start to slip. And I'm not sure exactly when that is, if that makes any sense.
Right. I mean, I do agree that there is that theoretical threshold point where it hangs back west of the gradient, and then you're only kind of phasing with strung out vorticity, and then you're getting, you know, like maybe like a 3 to 6 inch event for New York City instead of the blizzard. But I think the gradient also shifts further west with the northern stream trending better. So it gives the southern stream more, I guess, quote unquote, room to trend west without slipping west beyond that gradient point.
Right.
So I think the fact that they are intertwined gives us more wiggle room for it to trend west. But
right.
There is a point where it can go beyond that gradient point. I think where you and I differ is I think there's a little bit more flexibility with the gradient shifting west with the southern stream. But I think regardless, there is still that, you know, that, I guess, unfortunate snow lever threshold where it could slip east. But again, I think the fact that there's a little bit of intertwinement does help that scenario, you know, somewhat. You know, what I will say is I think if we're just talking, if you want to talk about some live models, you know, the RGEM, for example, did, at least in my opinion, while the northern stream ended up, you know, being a little bit better in some respects, the degree of southern stream hanging back west kind of outweighed the northern stream trending. And that's the RGEM is the first model in maybe like the last day or so where I actually thought the southern stream trends outweighed the northern stream trends.
Yep.
And I
yeah.
think that's actually why, while the RGEM is still a pretty good snow event for Long Island, and maybe it still pivots back in and it gives a decent snow event, you know, it's not a bad run in a vacuum, but the RGEM does illustrate the points that you were alluding to, John.
Yeah, and I think it's a great illustration of kind of my concern is, you know, in a world where you get this partial phase, right? I think, to your point, though, if you look at the RGEM compared to its earlier runs, I would say the main northern stream disturbance is also worse. It's also further east. So if you compare our like 60-63 with that piece of vorticity coming down through Canada to Minnesota, it's pretty considerably further east compared to its earlier runs.
I think that only
adds to the problem. Whereas, I don't know how much impact the southern stream being further or southern disturbance being further west would have had if that northern stream just stayed the same. So,
right.
I think the point across here though is this is a very intricate interaction, and you know. I'll be the first person to be screaming, yelling about a possible blizzard, and obviously that's on the table here. But I guess, you know, that this all kind of plays into my hesitancy, especially considering what we've seen from the European guidance this year, especially in this exact range, which has been let's over-amplify and over-phase every single storm known to man and, you know, make it the most extreme solution possible. And that's not even to go talk about simply just winter storms or say, oh, we're talking about the storm last week. I'm talking about so many different storms this winter and this fall that I feel like we've seen the European guidance in medium range just get so phase happy and tuck these storms in a lot more than they actually end up being tucked in. And so when I look at this RGEM solution, I think it almost should be a reset of expectations and an idea and understanding that there is this world where that sub-disturbance bumps further west, and maybe the northern disturbance doesn't come in at the perfect, you know, meridional angle that some of the models were suggesting, and you get kind of this middle ground solution where, you know, I think now based on the snow maps that are flying around and the European solutions, a lot of people would probably be disappointed.
Right.
Yeah.
And yeah, actually, I didn't even realize how much further east the northern stream entity was until you mentioned it. With the Northern Shin, I think there is more than just that, like, that vigorous Vort Max. I think there's also the orientation of the whole flow. Like, you know, if you look at 63 hours in 0Z compared to 18Z at 69, I actually did think the flow was a little bit more buckled from, like, Nebraska into Kansas. But the actual, like, you know, the Vort Max streaking through, like, you know, east of Manitoba into Minnesota, that was a little bit more progressive. So, yes, I do think if that were not as progressive, then I think it would have, quote-unquote, made up for the Southern Shin hanging back. But, you know, regardless, in the broad scheme of things, it does, you know, illustrate some of your concerns. But I think it's also a reminder that areas, you know, further east, such as, you know, Long Island and New England, there is a fairly high floor for this event in those areas. You know, but, you know, further west, the ceiling is just as high there as it is in the areas that have the higher floor in Long Island and southern New England.
Yeah, so again, I mean, I think, look at, you know, while we wait for GFS guidance, talk about, you know, your potential scenarios for this event and kind of where you are in terms of expectations, if you have any at all. But, you know, the highest confidence impacts right now have to be pretty much on the coast at this point, right? I mean, I would say the areas that are most likely at this point to see something are probably eastern New Jersey, Long Island, and southern New England.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely, especially if you're talking about a probabilistic forecast, that's definitely where the highest confidence of impact is, because even in our gem scenario, you're still getting a solid snowstorm. You're just, you know, maybe disappointing, you know, compared to what the obvious ceiling of this event is. But, you know, even areas on 95 or even a little bit further inland in like central New Jersey or southern New York, and, you know, in your neck of the woods, the ceiling is still incredibly high. It's just that, you know, confidence in a significantly impactful event is a little bit lower than it is further to the east. But I think something that was interesting, Berg posted about this with the European on ensemble probabilities, is that the probabilities for, like, I think 1 foot plus on it were actually a little bit higher in areas further south and west than they were further north and east because of an occluding, tucked-in banding scenario. But I think the probabilities of, like, 6 inches plus were higher in areas further north and east, which kind of illustrates, you know, the envelope of possibilities, and just how high the ceiling of this event could be if it, you know, phases cleanly and tucks in.
Yeah, I agree. I think, and again, I mean, if you look at some of these models, right, like the phase of the cyclonic vorticity is so important, right? So you don't need all of it, and I think that's what I have to clarify. You know, would it be great to get all of it in from that first disturbance in the four corners? Yes. But if we get a substantial amount of cyclonic vorticity phasing into this trough, into this northern disturbance that comes down through Minnesota, there's going to be an explosive, you know, deepening storm off the coast of Long Island and into New England. And so I think the question becomes, and the reason I've been so focused on that first disturbance is how much cyclonic vorticity are bringing in. Because if you go and look at any model, any model right now, and you go look aloft at the 500 millibar charts, and you loop it, and you look at when it absorbs and really fully phases that piece, or, you know, whatever, depending on what model you're looking at, whatever piece of that first disturbance is cyclonic vorticity. Once it pulls that in, everything goes nuts. That's when everything closes off. It wraps up, and the new surface flow can curl in, and everything changes. And so I think when you look at a solution like the RGEM, which would be definitely slightly disappointing for some people, it's almost like it's a little too it happens, but it's just a little too late because it hangs back just enough. And so, you know, the incoming northern stream trough being slightly more progressive is important. And it phases it just a hair too late for the majority of people, you know, in the 95 car, they're looking for this big blizzard and curl in. And it might still curl in, but it would do that for our friends in southern New England and not for our friends in New Jersey, you know, New York City, Long Island. So I think that's an important distinction. you know, we're talking about east out to sea. I mean, most models agree this storm is coming up the coast. It's just a matter of when that vorticity phases in, when this happens.
Right.
It's just so important to figure out exactly when that happens. Looking at example, I know this is not, you know, the best model to be looking at for any, really, but looking at the icon as an example.
Oh, good. Yeah.
You can see exactly, it hasn't really changed much with the idea of how much of that cyclonic vorticity is going to phase in from that first disturbance, right? It comes out of Colorado, it leaves a string of it behind in Texas, but on this most recent run, it phases a bunch of that cyclonic vorticity in faster than it did in the earlier runs. And so that wraps in and everything dynamically, the dynamic evolution of the cyclone goes to town. And so as the latent heat release process starts, you know, we're not going to dive too much into the technical crap, but as all that stuff goes on, you end up with higher heights ahead of the developing storm system, which helps that kind of curling in process, and you know, your mid-level centers close off faster. So the model itself is further west. But the storm system almost still hooks around part of New Jersey and New York because the phase of that cyclonic activity happens just a little too late. Whereas the Euro, that phase happens earlier than pretty much on any other item. And I guess that is what leads to my uncertainty and suspicion about the fact that the European guidance could be just a little too fast, a little too quick, with the vorticity, if that makes any sense.
Right. Because it illustrates kind of the evolution of the timing of when all that vorticity kind of rounds the base. And the timing of when it rounds the base really impacts when the surface all tucks in, and even when the jet dynamics expand, et cetera, et cetera, as you already alluded to. I do think the icon did trend a little bit faster with the ejection of the Southern Stream shortwave. I think what's also interesting when you talk about just the Northern Stream in general is, like, you know, if you were to just loop, like, you know, 18Z to 0Z, you'd think, oh, the Northern Stream, the Vortmax is entering further east, but it's not necessarily about where it's entering. It's about the angle, the orientation of it. And I thought the orientation of the Northern Stream was much more due north to south. Like the wind barbs in Nebraska and Iowa and Missouri had shifted a little bit more in a north to south fashion. So that allows a little bit of a cleaner phase. In addition to the Southern Stream being a hair quicker, but of course it still leaves enough vorticity behind, you know, to prevent, you know, the highest ceilings in the area, but certainly a pretty nice snowstorm for the coastal areas. You know, I don't think a lot of people along the immediate coast would be complaining if the icon verified, but of course it's still not nearly living up to the potential that some of the European guidance is implying.
Right,
this is a comment I meant to make earlier just with regards to the idea of, you know, amplified biases. I guess sometimes I have a difficult time, you know, grasping that concept, because what does amplified mean in this scenario, in this solution? Because on one hand, amplification could mean, an amplification bias could mean, oh, the Northern Stream is very amplified because the PNA ridge is very amplified, and if you were to account for that amplified bias, the storm is more progressive. But if we're also accounting for, well, the Southern Stream hanging back is also a byproduct of amplification, then theoretically correcting an amplification bias would allow for more progressiveness with the Southern Stream as well, which is why I don't know if I have the same, I guess, feelings about Euro amplification bias, big storm, as I have with some past events, if we're operating under the assumption that it's progressiveness that allows the Southern Stream to move faster. So I guess that's where I don't really know how to really apply model biases when talking about the potential outcomes. Instead, I'm more so just looking at, you know, where models are trending with the alignments of those features, regardless of what the typical model biases are.
Yeah, and I agree. I think a lot of what I'm discussing is an anecdotal type thing. You know, it's not necessarily like, oh, the euro is going to amplify, and it's something like, you know, something that's been proven for many years, right? So when we grew up with weather models, we knew the GFS was going to be progressive in the medium range, right? That was like something that happened all the time. And I don't necessarily think it's like that. And that's a proven bias, right? This is more of just an anecdotal thing, and just the storms that I've observed, you know, that I've tracked and forecasted across the country, but also in the Northeast. Last week, you know, a couple before that, there's some storms in the Midwest, some larger severe weather events, things like that. And it's just an anecdotal thought that European guidance, when it comes to phasing events, tends to just be a little phase happy, and wrap things up a little bit. Where it's been wrong, you know, it's been wrong. And so that the main reason that is a concern to me, I guess, given the setup, is that I'm yet to see any other guidance in the last, I don't know, 48 hours show anything like that. That's the thing, you know. And I'm not counting the 84-hour NAM for obvious reasons, you know, that, or one of the extrapolations.
Oh, man.
But and I guess my thing is, I haven't seen any other guidance that, I mean, probably can include the GFS Ensemble, because they're pretty far out there too now, to the east. I just haven't seen anything telling me, wow, okay, there's some multi-model support now for this to really wrap up and tuck in up Long Island. And so when I take that, the lack of other support for it, and I consider the fact that and again, anecdotally, in many of the storms that I've tracked and forecasted this year, I've watched the euro and the ETS be too wrapped up and then gradually trend less wrapped up as we got closer to the event. It just gives me pause and kind of some hesitancy when it comes to the expectation that this is going to trend more wrapped up, if that makes any sense.
Right. I mean, there definitely is a possibility that the European is being a little bit, you know, Northern Stream phase happy. And then when we talk about, like, the intricacies of the phase itself beyond just the initial alignment of Southern Stream and Northern Stream, then that's when I can say, okay, I can understand why, you know, people who are, you know, maybe west of I-95 are going to be a little bit wary of the European models phasing bias. So I definitely think you have a point in that regard. What I will say, though, is I still think when we, you know, take even like a second step back and look at just the trends synoptically on all the data, you know, broadly speaking, I think even if it's not been on every single run, the trends going back to 1 to 2 days on most models has been towards the European guidance, whereas the European guidance, I think, has broadly held fairly steady and, if anything, has continued to up the ante. Whereas I think of some of our past events, when the European model was a little phase happy and backed off, there were already kind of more, you know, hints of it backing off in advance, in a way, like with the weekend storm. Well, with last weekend when the European was phase happy, there were already, I think, warning signs that it was going to back off before it actually backed off, and the other models weren't really trending toward it as quickly, or best, which has been great this winter, was, I think, very stubborn and not really making any significant budgets toward it. Whereas what we have here is, I think, a lot of the models have been trending toward the European guidance more so than the European guidance has trended toward it.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, I think especially when it comes to the northern disturbance, we've seen the guidance trend towards the European, and the GF definitely in the last couple of model runs has come further east with that southern or initial disturbance as well. I think that's absolutely true. I think the thing that gives me pause, though, is the general tendency that I've seen on the European guidance, which is similarly to the GFS, right? I mean, we've seen the GFS the last five GFS runs with that disturbance. Look at it valid, I don't know, Thursday morning, right? And you look at the Four Corners region, it has moved eastward by not a small amount. it is more and more progressive with that disturbance. At the same time, the European guidance for the same valentine has backed it slowly further west, about the same amount as the GFS has gone east each run. And it's kind of like tick, tick, tick. And we know that where the GFS is right now is, you know, it's more phased and wrapped up than it was before, but it's still east. And we know that the European has been very wrapped over the last couple of runs. So what I'm wondering is, where is the tipping point on the scale? You know, does the GFS continue to come east towards Euro? Does the Euro back a little bit more? Because we know now, we just watched it happen generally with the Argent, but we know that a couple more ticks to the west with the initial disturbance like the European, you're going to start to get at least a slightly more partial phase and get that cyclonic vorticity there a little bigger. And all of a sudden, those big wrapped up south bound systems are going to disappear, I think, at least in my opinion. And so what I'm wondering really is, where is that inflection point? The two models are trending towards each other if you look at that initial disturbance. That is absolutely happening. And so what I'm wondering is, where is that meeting point, that inflection point? And I think we're going to find out in the next probably 12 hours or so, 24 hours. And I'm very curious to see how it all evolves.
Well, I think, though, the GFS trended so far east with the southern stream that if you look at the 18Z GFS at 48 hours compared to the 18Z Euro at 48 hours, the GFS is actually just with the southern stream further east already than the European model. Mm-hmm. So I don't really – I think in that regard, the European model kind of already – again, doesn't mean it can't back further to the west, but when I talk about the models broadly speaking synoptically – shifting toward the European ideas, that's what I'm referring to, that it's not even like they're still very divergent, and if the Euro shifts to where the GFS is with that feature, then the storm's going to go out to sea, because, again, the Euro and GFS are already very similar. If anything, the Euro was further west with the shortwave of 48 hours compared to the GFS. So then
yeah,
it kind of comes down to the northern stream.
Right, and so you know, comparing, since you have it up right now, I'll let you do it. But comparing the northern stream disturbance, Euro and GFS, what critical difference then between the two of them? And I'm guessing the European is faster, more meridionally orientation, though.
Yeah, I'm actually going to, because actually I hadn't specifically compared the 18Z GFS and Euro until, you know, what you were saying made me think to do so. So I'm floating it up now. But, yes, the European model is definitely more meridional. It's actually, if you look at 66 hours on both the 18Z Euro and the 18Z GFS, it's a pretty significant difference.
I'm going to pull it up right now.
It's not even like the GFS, it's not a bad look for snow, but it's just very with the northern stream. I think the Vort Max itself on the European model is technically further east, but the angle of its approach is very different.
I agree. Looking at the differences between the 18Z GFS and 18Zero, I'm just browsing through it right now. Yeah, it's funny because They are pretty substantially different at hour 66. And like you said, you maybe wouldn't even know it looking at the orientation of things, but it really is that orientation of that disturbance dropping down. I would say even, Doug, 72 hours is probably like the key, right? I mean, because the European is so much more phased at that hour. Right, it's got that northern disturbance is dropping in through Minnesota, and it's on a much more meridional kind of path there, whereas the GFS is just not quite there. It's up near the international border, and it's kind of weaker and a little bit more progressive looking compared to the Euro at that time with that disturbance. So I will argue, I think the GFS is a little slower still with that a nasal disturbance, a southern disturbance, it's still just a hair slower. It's just a hair slower. Both of those things, and then obviously the model physics, right? Both that, it all comes down to the physics of the model at that point. How is it going to phase? What's going to happen? And the euro is way more amplified by the time you get to hour 90, not even close. So,
right.
Super interesting stuff.
The models are going to diverge even more at that phase and critical point that you alluded to. But yes, go on.
Well, yeah, exactly. I just think that 72 hours is your inflection point there, where the European GFS are a little different. But you know, cheap point, I'm surprised looking at this at the fact that they're not that different before that. I mean, I think, like you said, when it comes to that initial disturbance, they really aren't all that different. It's mainly how clean the phase is and how that northern stream disturbance comes down on the European model that makes a difference.
Right. Yeah, and I guess that's why I'm trying not to analyze the southern stream too much on its own. It's still really important to look at, but it's contextually important to look at. But I think it also, the European shows, is kind of a reminder that we have a little bit more room for error with the southern stream than I think one would have initially believed, but again, that room for error is kind of predicated on, you know, the northern stream approaching at a more meridional angle. Because even at hour 72 on the European, there's still some vorticity kind of trailing behind throughout much of Texas initially. It's not like it's all that
right.
thin just yet. But to your point, because of just, you know, just how meridional the angle of approach of that vortex is through Wisconsin, that really makes the biggest difference. And even you could even say, oh, technically the GFS is entering that vortex for the southwest. But again, it's not the longitude of where it enters; it's the angle and orientation of its entering. So the European model is entering it at a much more due north to south angle. And that leads to the phase. So as long as we're entering it at that due north to south angle, then it buys a little bit more time for the initially strung out vorticity to kind of get out ahead and round the base of the trough at a longitude far enough west to still crush everyone with snow.
Angle is a great point, but also the intensity, right? I mean, it comes down with much more vapor on the European compared to the GFS. And these are all things that we can sit here and talk about for hours. But, you know, it's going to be – I personally, you know, I know there's a middle ground where it ends up, you know, being like a light to moderate snowstorm for most people and like crushing Cape Cod in Boston. I think that that's possible. But I tend to think that this is either going to be a go big or go home type situation. That's kind of where my mind goes with this. And I'm very, very curious, especially based on what's happened over the last couple of weeks where we've seen the European B2 amplified. I'm very curious to see kind of what happens. I really am. I mean, we talk about I don't want to compare the two storms because they're totally different. It was just last week that the European was hundreds of miles too far north and west with it had plenty of ensemble support too. It wasn't like alone by itself. It does give me pause. That being said, like you said, I think we have seen trends on the GFS gone more towards the euro over the last, I don't know, probably 12, 24 hours. So it's going to be interesting, 15 minutes coming up now? GFS is starting to roll out as we speak. And, you know, Doug, for the people that are listening and checking it out, I have it out to hour 42 right now. But
you're ahead of me because I don't have – I'm only up to 33 on Pivotal. I do – just quick comment. The northern stream looks a little bit more meridional already on this run, I think, so far. But I'll let you kind of comment a little bit more since you're ahead of me in the hours.
Yeah, so – I'll stick with where you're at. I don't want to jump ahead if I absolutely need to. One thing I noticed on the RGEM that I want to bring to attention here for people that are tracking at home, the RGEM was further east with the northern stream. It maybe was not more less meridional with the northern stream, but it was further east with it because it expanded kind of the width of the ridging over western North America, over British Columbia. So the ridge wasn't necessarily taller or stronger, it was wider. And so the TPV kind of tightened a little and pulled the northern stream disturbance a little further east into it, almost, if it makes any sense. And so the entry point of that disturbance into the United States was further east. And that really hurts us if that happens. Because then, all of a sudden, you are losing kind of that buffer zone that we've gained with the positive trends of the northern stream. So if the northern stream disturbance comes into the U.S. further east, that would not be good at all. And I just wanted to talk about that just quickly. I think, you know, Doug, you brought up some really good points about kind of that buffer zone that the northern stream and the kind of meridional trends there have given us. I just think that is one negative that I saw on the RGM that I want to watch for on the GFS so far. So, again, I don't see really any overly substantial trends with GFS so far through hour 48. The one thing that I am noticing, though, in Canada is something similar to what I was just discussing, that the northern stream disturbance is a little bit further east. There is a slightly more meridional trend look to it, but it is a little further east, and we don't really have much room to play around with that. No real changes to the southern, the initial disturbance, though. But I also don't see anything really arguing for this to phase earlier either.
Well, I do think the meridional component to the northern stream is more important. Not both the longitude it enters and the meridional component are important, but I think the meridional component is more important than the longitude, which would mean that I would rather, you know, of course, ideally you want it both meridional and west, but I would rather it be more meridional and a little east than less meridional and a little west, which is,
right.
I guess, why I saw the initial GFS trend in that regard, assuming it's not, you know, too substantial as a positive so far. But with all that said, I don't see anything major in terms of trends on it just yet. I'm finally out to hour 48 now, and I definitely do see what you're talking about. I'm really interested to see if the meridional component ends up, I guess, outweighing the further east longitude, or if it's the longitude is far enough east to where the meridional component does not make up for it, and then you get less basin.
Yeah, so an interesting thing I'm doing here is comparing this GFS run with 18-0 out to hour, I'm out to hour 54. And the main thing I notice is that it is less phased again across kind of that international border region as that disturbance comes in. However, it is improved in that region compared to its 18Z, 12Z, and all the earlier runs. It's a little better with that. It's a little faster and further south. So we'll have to see where it goes from here if it does bring that disturbance down and kind of encourage phasing maybe a little earlier than it had the earlier runs. With that being said, I actually think it's slightly worse with that initial disturbance. So I'm curious to see what happens here. I mean, this could be an argument, Doug, for that defends what you were saying before, which is that if that northern stream disturbance comes down a little faster, all of a sudden, you know, the phase could happen, and we don't need all of the southern stream or the southern initial. I keep calling it southern stream. Well, it's the southern disturbance. We might not need all of that cyclonic vorticity, just some of it. So we'll have to see kind of how it goes on this run. That being said, it's definitely not phasing as quickly as the European was, and it's slightly less of that kind of meridional look that the Euro had. But it is a slight improvement over its prior run with that. That being said, you know, I guess the best way I can put it is I don't really see anything yet. I'm at hour 60 now. Nothing really is jumping out at me that's going to tell me that this run's going to be a big improvement. But I'll defer to your analysis. I know you're a little bit further back, but you can still get a good look at it at this point.
I'm finally at 54 now. What's that? Of course, I accidentally X'd out my 18G GFS. Of course. Too many tabs. So let's pull this back up. All right, I'm at 57 hours on 0Z, and then let's compare that to 63 on 18Z. And
yeah, the comparison between the 18Z and the 0Z run is interesting, but I would have to say it's a hair worse.
I don't disagree. I do think the northern stream is more meridional, but it's not so much more meridional that it's making up for the southern stream hanging back a little further west. And so I think there's one good and two bad. If we're just being a little bit more simple, northern stream more meridional, good. Northern stream longitude further east, bad. Southern stream a little bit further southwest, bad. But I don't know if we're going to get any major changes at the surface.
I guess what the northern stream is coming in a little bit faster, which is good. I think the jet, looking at the upper jet, it's a little faster coming down. This is where the inflection point comes in. Because where is the point where that southern disturbance being, because this run was worse with that. I mean, that's not debatable. It was worse with that. So the question now becomes, so the southern stream isn't really all that much better, and the southern stream is worse. What's it going to look like? And I think the end result is you're not going to get the height rises that you need to get this to wrap up. And if it does, it's going to do it a little later than we want it to. That's kind of the overall direction that I go in with it, because if you even compare it to the 18Z Euro, the 18Z Euro was already more phased and more wrapped up with this at this point. Everything is going to happen later on this run. And I think most importantly is I definitely don't see this run as an improvement over the 18Z run at all. I don't think it's
right.
I don't think that this gotten better from a net position. There's very little, if I'm looking at the 18Z run, to be quite honest, it's not all that much better than the 12Z run, even. I don't think. So, some work to do still on the GFS guidance, which again leads me to kind of where my main concern lies with the storm is we just haven't seen, the European guys in this medium range has been so insistent on this happening, and I'm yet to see another global deterministic round support that in the last 24 to 48 hours. I know the Canadian was doing it 2 days ago, but it was doing it in a completely different fashion, so we can both agree to dismiss that, I would assume.
That evolution, the hits on the GFS from Canadian like 2-3 days ago, those evolutions didn't really make much sense. They were much faster. It was more of just like a fast coastal hugger. So those are hits kind of for the wrong reasons. So,
correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I think if you consider that, I don't have another piece of deterministic guidance that looks like the European in the last 48 hours. And so that is where my concern lies, especially if the European continues to tick a little bit worse. I just think it's going to get to an inflection point where eventually it's just going to slip. And it would be similar to what we've seen with European guys over the last month or two, just from an anecdotal perspective. So, again, not again, I don't want to, be all doom and gloom like, oh, my God, it's over. But, I think if we continue to see these kind of the lack of support from other guidance and the trends, tonight, what this was to me more than anything was the end of the positive trends on the GFS, because it didn't trend better. It might have gotten slightly worse. So that is notable to me. Anytime, because the GFS is a very trendy model. I know that's not technical jargon, but the model physics and the biases, it tends to trend instead of jumping toward solutions. So you'll see 4, 5, 6, 7 run trends, and then you'll get to the final solution on the GFS. It's absolutely maddening. But it happens all the time. So when a trend stops or reverses on the GFS, I always pay close attention to that. And I would say that that's what happened tonight. This run, you know, there had been better trends up until the 18th round, and this run did not. Not better at all. So something to consider, and it kind of is the same thing that we talked about during the show, which is, you know, that sort of hook scenario where a lot of Mid-Atlantic folks are left disappointed.
Right. I do agree that in the net, when you're kind of accounting for every feature, this run did trend worse, but going back to what you're saying about the faster portion of the rigorous northern stream, I do think that part is a positive in that if you even look at the depth of the trough, like the 528 height line and the 531 height lines are actually much further south and kind of more absorbed into the trough. So the trough itself ended up becoming more compact and with more depth than the 18Z run did. So that on its own, I think, was a good thing. The problem was the longitude in which this occurred was too far east, and that may probably outweigh the positives that I just alluded to make it an overall net worse run from a surface reflection standpoint. But yeah.
Yeah. So, and again, I think, we'll wait for the GFS ensemble, and then maybe we'll take a little further before we end things for tonight. Just kind of lay out for those that are watching. I mean, what are you really looking for on these models? And I'll answer with my own thoughts after you. But what are you really looking for in terms of trends on the other guidance? If you want to see that large wrapped up big storm that hits the majority of people listening to the show with the significant snowstorm.
I think the most important component is to, for the more widespread high ceiling scenario, is to have the northern stream both enter at a reasonably far west longitude and have its angle be meridional. Looking for both of those things, I think, raises the ceiling of the event and also gives us a little bit more wiggle room with the southern stream.
Yeah, I agree with that. The main thing I want to see tomorrow is I want to see one piece of deterministic guidance with something like the Euro. That's the first thing. But in terms of trends, I also want to see I want to see guidance trend towards that faster phase with that northern stream disturbance coming down faster and with a more meridional orientation. But then also, I'd like the trends to continue when it comes to that first initial disturbance. I'd like to see that move out a little faster and that cyclonic vorticity to get eastward a little faster. I agree with you that the northern disturbance is kind of the main piece here. You and I have been talking about that for days now. And it's gotten a lot better, but, and you can really see its importance. When you look at a model like the RGEM tonight, you can see the importance of the difference of, 150 miles, 100 miles, what that disturbance makes. It just pushed it further east enough so that it comes down, phases interact, and the whole entire evolution is further east. Which, by the way, is a risk largely because we don't have a frickin' block or a 50-50 to help this thing happen in a certain place, which is, by the way, why those features are so important and so often associated with our big snowstorms. The reason why when we're in those patterns, we can approach these storms with so much more confidence. Doug, I remember our radio show before 2016 Blizzard. I mean, we were so confident that that was coming. I mean, that was the models weren't even showing. There wasn't a whole ton of agreement yet, but it was that synoptically was that's a situation where you know you're willing to go say you know, I was willing to grab a microphone, come on the radio, and say I do not care if the models show, we're going to get crushed. And so that's just the nature of that pattern. A pattern like this is different and much more of, you know, we really need this to trend in a certain direction in order for it to work. We really need the Northern Stream to do this in order for it to work. And so I think that is my biggest concern here. I'd like to see some other support for this space solution. So in order to get that, like you alluded to, we need to see that Northern Stream coming faster, and we'd like to see that first observance, trend closer to European guidance and kind of come down. But at this point, the differences really are in the Northern Stream right now. Because
that's still where I think the most significant differences are. From a longitude standpoint, with the Southern Stream, even with the slight changes in tonight's GFS. The exact initial longitude of the Southern Stream is still not that different from the 18V European model, but what is still starkly different is the orientation of the Northern Stream. So I think because of the fact that longitudinally, that's where the biggest divergence currently stands between the GFS and the European model, that's still the feature that, to me, if we're talking about a single entity, holds its most importance. But I still, again, would emphasize that you need to look at both the Southern Stream and the Northern Stream and their, you know, kind of a net alignment. You don't want to microanalyze just one feature and not consider the other. So just as before, right. I was talking about how, you know, it may not be prudent to only microanalyze the Southern Stream. We also don't want to only microanalyze Northern Stream either. They're both important. They're both integral in terms of the final outcome. But again, you know, just to you know reiterate the initial point that the Northern Stream is currently where the guidance that is a major historical snowstorm and the guidance is merely just a light snowstorm. That's where the divergence is the biggest.
Right. Isn't it crazy how the slightest little difference with vorticity in freaking Saskatchewan can impact whether we see, you know, a glancing blow or a historic blizzard. This is the stuff about meteorology that blows my mind. And that's how we love it, but, man, it's easy to microanalyze this stuff. I mean,
right. Admittedly, yeah. things like what you just mentioned is honestly why I tend to prefer this, like, analyzing and tracking weather than making, like, explicit forecasts, because it really is so challenging to actually, stick your neck out there and make a real forecast when, you know, the intricacies are well within the margin of error of a typical 5-day forecast that would lead to, because, of course, theoretically, like, you would think, oh, like 5 days or, you know, 4 or 5 days in advance, you should have, maybe within, like, all else being equal, like a 50 to 100 mile idea as to where a feature will trend. But in reality, like, it's like 25 miles of a certain feature in the Northern Stream could mean the difference between a big snowstorm and not much at all. And then when you talk about the lead time we still have, it's still a reminder that lots can change. And, we sometimes also don't want to make too much of how one model suite has behaved because we're still at the range where things could kind of shift back in the other direction the next day.
Right, and that's old saying we used to have back in the day. It was a farmer could sneeze in Nebraska and the whole thing would change. And it's kind of like, it's just funny how it's the slightest little thing could make a big difference. When you go into the individual model runs and you think about, oh my God, the GFS is east and oh wow, the Euro way west. Like, you almost sometimes have to take a bird's eye view and back up and be like, okay, here's where we stand. The storm is 90 hours away. Full Storm is not even on Sam, but it's time to relax and kind of take all in and see what happens in the next 12 to 24 hours on the models as a whole. And I don't even know if in 24 hours we'll know, you know, exactly what's going to happen or if it can come back west or go east. So there's a long way to go with this, especially with what we've seen then, which is just the tiniest little change can make an enormous difference in what happens. And exactly how that phase evolves.
Right, and I think because of how easily identifiable the storm was on guidance, and because of how long we've been tracking it for, it makes it appear like the storm is closer to reality, and that like we need the models to look a certain way by a certain point sooner than what is kind of reality. I think. I would like to see model convergence by maybe Thursday morning, considering there are some changes that, they're so far enough away to where we have time, but maybe not so far enough away to where we can wait beyond Thursday morning for more convergence. So, even if some models take kind of like a step back, I don't think there's necessarily an indicator that that's where things are going to continue the trend, because we're not at that range yet where one model shift is necessarily an indicator of a larger trend or a reversal just yet. But having said all of that, I do think what is unfortunate for the snow loving perspective is I think this was the first time that we saw, I think, the alignment of Southern Stream and Northern Stream make a shift in the worst direction. Because, there were some other, like the European model runs that are still crushing us, even when the Southern Stream was further west, the overall alignment of Southern Stream and Northern Stream was still improving. And I think for all up until the 0Z RGEM and 0Z GFS, pretty much every piece of guidance was improving that alignment for what you'd want for a bigger storm. And this was the first time that I thought the alignment was a little bit less favorable. But part of why part of why I've been on the more optimistic side of the storm being a bigger one is because of the fact that the alignment, broadly speaking, has still been such a net improvement over the last couple of days. And I don't want to think that just one run tonight changes that. But again, the GFS and the RGEM, I think, are worse with the alignment of those features. Having said all that, it does appear that the 0Z Canadian model actually shifted further west. That did just come out, those precipitation-type maps. I have not seen the Canadian aloft. I'm very curious to see how it trended aloft. But the surface output is definitely further west than the 12Z was.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm looking at the sim now. Now, I have a question, and I'm the last guy to know. When the shift from the RGEM, from the regional gem, to the Canadian on these maps? Is it 48 hours? Let's see. Let me back it up to 48.
I thought it was at 40. I thought at 48 was when, after 48 is when it.
Yeah, you're right. You're
when
right.
It,
yeah, so 48,
also
at 49, you get the resolution gets worse. At 49, yeah. So the operational Canadian is, I guess I would say, probably somewhere in between the wrapped up European solutions, right, and the GFS. It does get some substantial banding to New York City, valid at about,
right. And even, yeah.
Trying to find 83 hours from 0Z, and then it does kind of linger around that big deform band, goes to town over Montauk, Eastern Long Island, and then works into central Massachusetts and eventually New Hampshire. But a middle ground scenario that could still result in a significant snowstorm for parts of the New York Metro.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of snow lovers in the New York City Metro area would gladly take the Canadian model solution. And I do think it shows that there is theoretically a middle ground between the GFS and the European that could still bring a lot of snow to a good portion of people. It's just that, you know, we do have a lot of members who are a little bit further west, such as in the, you know, in like the Philly area, who, of course, we, you know, we'd love to see get in on the snow as well. And if they're still kind of on the fringes on the Canadian, but at least,
yeah.
you know, for those purposes, it did trend better for those, better for snow in those areas as well. But I'm really curious to see how the gem trended aloft. But one
it really gets me how the storms were 84 hours away. I really do feel like we've been tracking this for a week.
It's a reminder that how far away it is because, like, yeah, the GFS making one shift at 0Z is not necessarily a representation of how all the models are going to trend. We're still at a far enough range where there's going to be shifts in either direction, and one model run does not mean the European is wrong, or one model trending towards the European model doesn't mean the European model is right. We're not at that range yet.
Right, right. Well, and I think the other thing to consider, too, is I just got to bring back some memories, but we've had storms where the European has shown a hit at the range we're at right now, lost it, and brought it back. That has happened. I mean, we've seen the European lose a storm at 84, 90, 96 hours and bring back at 60, 66 hours out. I think, though, when we're looking at differences, and I'm just going to switch gears for a quick second and pull up the GFS ensemble out to hour 66, but I'm comparing it to the European ensemble from AT&T valid at 72. If everyone is following along, 72-hour EPS, 66-hour GFS, and the difference is so apparent as why EPS, which, by the way, AT&T had a lot more stuff in earlier runs, but the differences are very apparent as to why the EPS is further west and wrapped up, and it's all across the north-central plains. Well, I guess east parts of Minnesota, Iowa,
yeah.
Missouri.
I'm seeing it, yeah.
It is, yeah, it's so much more phased. Honestly, Doug, the southern stream is the same. I mean, the southern stream
right,
is the same.
Right.
It might actually be better on the GFS ensemble. But the GFS ensemble says this is not going to come in European ensemble suggests at all. And so the entire cyclonic evolution of the whole thing is different. It's flat. It's not the same. And so the question really, everything is starting to lean on the northern stream disturbances, orientation, and approach into Canada and then into the United. This is hour 15 for me today, so I'm not going and looking at where the service originates from. But something tells me that we will know by tomorrow night whether or not the European GFS is going to be correct, because that disturbance is going to be in central Canada in 24 hours. So I think we're at the point. Let me back up just, actually, it might be 48 hours. But at the very least, it'll be, you know, closer to us in 24, 36 hours. It's actually 48 hours until it gets to central Canada. Regardless, I think the sensitivity to the forecast is going to drop significantly once we get to that point. And if you really want to have fun, I know Tomer's been doing stuff with this and Jack still, and I haven't been on the forum since we've been on this call, but if you want to do some connectivity, you can probably go back and look and see how the GFS and European differ with their handling of that disturbance. And I would be willing to bet that it's very different right away. And so it becomes a question of which model is going to be correct. You know, how is it going to orient itself as it comes in? Because European is not only more horizontal as it enters Minnesota, but it's also faster and stronger. And that is what is encouraging the entire phase process as all that cyclonic vorticity is wrapped in. So I think that northern disturbance is going to become the focus here over the next 2 days.
Right. Yeah, that's why I made the point that the southern stream on its own is not the most important feature. The northern stream is, I think, the most important feature to look at going forward, and I'm not really going to be looking so much as far as the longitude of the southern stream and when it ejects, because ultimately the northern stream coming down and phasing in is is the more important item. And I think in the GFS guidance up until tonight's 0-0 run, I thought the Northern Stream was trending more meridionally toward the European. It's just that in the run at 0-0, it took kind of a step back in that regard. But, man, I did not realize how stark the Northern Stream differences were until you, kind of pointed it out with, because I'm looking at hour 66 on the GEFS versus hour 72 on the EPS, and that is it's almost like two different storms when you look at the Northern Stream, but the Southern Stream is pretty much, it's pretty much the same. So, that part of that might even be in relation to the polar vortex and how buckled to the southwest it is, and that's going to be a pretty hard feature for the models to have an orientation of because of how elongated it is and how fast the gradient is. And because there's no block to keep the polar vortex in place, so that feature is going to have, I think, maybe a little bit more sensitivity in the models, which thus affects the Northern Stream sensitivity as well, which I think needs to add more uncertainty to the forecast.
We're just pouring uncertainty into the cup. That's what we're doing right now. But, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the GFS ensemble, too, if we're going to talk about anecdotal crap, which we have a lot tonight, I'm tired. We're just talking, spitballing. And this goes hand in hand with me saying, hey, the year anecdotally has been too wrapped up. The GFS ensemble, which I'm using to reference in this discussion, is almost always too far south and east and just generally garbage when it comes to storms like this. I mean, I can count five storms in the last two winters where this model, including last week, has just been, or 2 weeks ago, has just been bad. It's south and east and bland and bad, and it doesn't adjust until the very last second. So I think, if we're gonna throw anecdotal stuff in, we have to throw that in too.
Right, and another anecdotal point on top of that is that's why I think the Canadian run was pretty important in that it shows a theoretical middle ground scenario where maybe you're accounting for the progressive biases of the GFS and the amplified biases of the European model, showing there's a middle ground scenario where a lot of people can still get in on some heavy snow, which is further why I'm very curious as to what the GGEM looks like aloft to see what the middle ground scenario looks like aloft.
Right, right. Well, we should have it shortly. I gotta be honest with you. I don't look at the Canadian that much, so I don't know how long it takes to come out or what the deal is. But it is out to hour 36 on handy dandy Storm Vista and 24 on Pivotal. Hey, I gotta say, and I know that we're not there yet, and I'm mostly just joking around, but the UK net has been very consistent, and it's starting to look like that solution is not totally out of the realm of possibilities. I think it's consistently known, hey, this could be a big storm, but it never really has buckled back to the impressive stuff. But it has not done well recently, and I'm mostly just joking about that. But,
So is it time for me to turn my neck sideways and look at that awful French site? Is it even out on that website?
When I think back to the 2010s, the winter when we had blizzard after blizzard, I cannot believe some of the graphics that we had to look at. Do you remember, first of all, the Canadian maps would come out at like 4,000 by 8,000 pixels. And despite all those pixels, there's a black and white map that I still could have. I had no idea what those maps were showing. No idea. It was just a complete disaster. Then you'd have to look at the European on the Plymouth State weather site, and you would only get every 12 hours, and the site would crash because so many weather weenies were going on and trying to load the Euro. And it was a nightmare.
How did we track so easily back then? Like, I don't know how we did it.
It's amazing that we have websites like
Homer's website, like Tidbits, like, and so many other great people who program to just make the, tracking just so much easier and also, like, just accessible for the hobbyist.
Well, someone brought this up to me the other day and said,
You know, the models, a lot of people are like, oh, the Euro is worse now than it was before. And I agree that it's a little more jumpy. But we didn't have the access to the Euro that we had back then, that we have now. We never had that.
Right.
So, you know, now we can see, first of all, the Euro runs four freaking times a day. And, you know, we have access to this the most detailed information for free. It's out there everywhere. And so I think there's some degree of oversaturation going on where it's like we, you know, 8 years ago when we were tracking Boxing Day, I was still looking on those Plymouth State sites because there was no Euro data available really anywhere. 12 years ago. And so I think that's an important factor when you think back on it. It's not the same now as it was back then. And the European model definitely has been jumpy recently, but that doesn't mean that it's necessarily gotten worse.
Right.
So the Canadian's at 54
I guess
now.
I see the 54 on sort of tidbits at H5. And it's just that, you know, we're comparing it to 12D because there's no, you know, 18, well, there's no like accessible 18D Canadian. So, but, you know, compared to 12Z, the northern stream definitely is more meridional, but not so much further east. Like, I think the meridional component to the northern stream improved more than the longitude got east, if that makes sense. Which I think is probably ultimately why there was more probably cleaner phasing and more westward expansion of precipitation. But it's funny, the 12Z was a really strong storm, though. It deepened to, what, the 950s? It just didn't have the expansiveness of precipitation that maybe, I guess, you know, some would have wanted to see. And I still didn't exactly know why. I guess that's probably because I don't, you know, I don't look at the Canadian that much either for that much depth. But tonight, I'm more so looking, wanting to see it as a representation of what the middle ground scenario looks like, just as a frame of reference.
Yeah, so one thing I'm doing right now is I'm comparing the Canadian to the GFS. And the two really aren't all that different. The main difference is, guess where?
Northern stream?
It is with the northern stream, right. The Canadian is faster in bringing that vorticity down across the international border. And it's not even quite as meridional as the Euro, which explains why it's not as wrapped up and crazy, which I increasingly, again, I increasingly am doubting whether or not that's going to happen. Either way, the Canadian is more, it's faster and more meridional with this vorticity dropping southward compared to DFS. It is very apparent at hour 54. I mean, you can look for yourself, but I'm sure that's what I'm saying. It is. And it's specifically the vorticity with the disturbance over central Canada at the same time as the GFS.
Right.
And so
this is stark. Yeah.
Yeah. That change starts the phase process, and that vorticity dropping down is kind of like the match that lights us all up when it does scoop up, when it does scoop up the cyclonic vorticity from the first disturbance. And on the GFS, that's just happening a little late and a little sloppy.
Right.
So that's what this Canadian run is telling me. And honestly, just looking at this Canadian run, it's way more similar to the European than the GFS. I just want to throw that one out there. So
you're saying it's closer to with the northern stream, while it's not as meridional as the European, it's closer to the European than the GFS.
Yeah, I'm going to look at hour 63. Just give me 1 second here. I want to get the European pulled up at the same time, same value. Ugh, I don't know why it does this. Pulls me into last night's European model. Yeah, it is definitely much closer. It's actually pretty dead nuts onto the European with the northern stream disturbance. The main difference in the Canadian here, between the Canadian and the European, is it's a little bit more suppressive with the TPV.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's something I haven't looked at as a difference before in models. The Canadian is pretty much nuts to the European, the 18Z European. The 18th European might be slightly more meridional list, slightly, coming into, like, Illinois, Iowa. But these like, height lines are exactly the same. It's extremely right. close to European. At hour 69, valid hour 69. If I'm looking at the tilt, the meridional tilt of this and the southern disturbance, it is almost in the exact spot as a European model. The difference on the Canadian is there is a more suppressive height field over Southeast Canada with that PPV, and I think that acts to keep this a little bit more progressive. But I mean, largely, man, I mean this is close. This is close to the.
Even the NAM at hour 54, I think with the northern stream is closer to the Canadian than the GFS is.
Yeah.
So I guess that's why I don't know if I, you know, buy the idea that the European is completely on its own, because broadly synoptically, there's a data has been shifting toward it. But there's still enough intricacies in the setup to where the European could be mostly correct, but you still don't get like the major blizzard.
Exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly what I've been trying to allude to. That's the world that I think is concerning, especially now that we've talked, you know, about this possible major blizzard. I think. That's the world where we start looking at the possibility of this being a little disappointing, is where the European is largely correct, but it's just too wrapped up. And that is a disappointing solution for a lot of people. So I just wanna say, again, I really encourage you to go do this. Look at the 0Z Canadian at 84 hours and then go look at the 18-0 at 90 hours. I mean, the Canadian is just maybe a hair faster. But if you look at the heights, everything is pretty much exactly the same. It's just, yeah, I mean, I'm not so sure. Man, this is tough. The 12Z Euro worked because it did what it did because it wrapped this in. It wrapped the surface low in. And the Canadian is just a little, it's not quite as good because it doesn't curl it in like the European model did dynamically. So for the New City Metro
right.
specifically, you don't get that big expansion of precipitation. The cold conveyor belt stuff doesn't come backing in. That's the only difference here. The surface low, it apes up towards Cape Town before it starts to get really captured. Whereas the Euro does it a little further south. But, man, Doug, you got to go look at the Canadian at hour 72 and 78 and 84 at H5 and compare it to the European. I mean, the only difference is a slightly more suppressive TPV over Southeast Canada, but I don't even think that's that important. The overall trough belt is so close. It's more about how the model is handling the storm like maturation process.
Right. Yeah, but from an optimistic perspective, I'd still prefer to kind of get the general synoptics in the way that we want and then worry about the more specifics in terms of, you know, the exact intricacies of when the low tucks in and, you know, any convection
right.
chasing and, you know, late at a later point because we are still so far out. But I guess what I'm curious about, because I don't have – storm visit, so it's hard for me to compare the oh actually
well,
I
it's
on,
on,
maybe
it's
on pivotal
on
okay because actually
so
what
Google,
I'm gonna
Google
do is I'm curious to see the direct like the wind barbs the direction of the H5 wind, so I'm gonna
yeah.
be actually looking
you're
at
gonna be blown
oh,
away.
Oh I don't
if
know
if
that's
to 66
that a,
if you go to hour 66 or 60 or 72 and you look at the difference between the European and the Canadian tonight, you are going to be relaxed. I mean, they are lock and set, generally. I'm going to wait here.
So I have the, I'll have a comparison soon. So now I'm just looking at 5 and over heights in winds. on the, well, of course I clicked on the wrong European run.
Focus, Doug, focus, come on.
Yeah. So I'm just comparing, well, the 12Z Euro at 84 versus the G-Gen at 72, the 500 millibar wins. This isn't really all that different, but I do think the European H5 wins were a little bit more meridional. But the overall, like, the synoptics and the trough configuration are very similar. But, yeah, I think a lot of it is kind of because I think, like, the orientation of the H5 wind barb is actually pretty important when you're kind of making that transition from synoptics to, like, sort of mesoscale. It's still not really mesoscale per se, but when you're transitioning from, okay, broad phase to, okay, where is exactly the surface flow going to go? Where is exactly is the heavy banding going to set up, and where is it going to tuck in? The H5 wind barbs can be pretty telling in that regard. So that's where I think there's a little bit more subtle differences in favor of the European in terms of, okay, I can see why the European is snowier than the G-Gem. But, yeah, from a broad synoptic standpoint, the G-Gem is much closer to the European than the GFS is. And, you know, not that this is the way to interpret it, but I think an optimistic but not unrealistic way to interpret it is it means the GFS could still maybe trend towards those solutions. Doesn't mean it will. You know, because we should have the UKMET in soon. I don't, not right now, but
I have it.
On Pivotal, you have it?
It's way east. Yeah, it's not good.
Way east?
Yeah, it's got basically no precipitation for Long Island. It's got about an inch of liquid in Boston and Cape Cod, but I haven't seen the surface, but the entire precipitation show was offshore pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like that hasn't really budged.
No. And again, I really don't use it all that much, but generally I'd like to see it show something similar to what the Euro has shown once. It's definitely got worse as well. Not any better. It's definitely worse. So whatever happened with it tonight, the precipitation shield way east of the 12Z run. The Jersey run from last night was very wrapped up. The run was a little less wrapped up, and the most recent run is even less wrapped up. So, you know, take it for what it's worth, however you value the UKMET, but it's not very good.
I don't value the UKMET, but, you know, like, I'd be lying if the fact that it's been very consistent isn't something to consider. But there have been many storms where the UKMET has been very stubbornly progressive, even at short leads. It's not overly concerning, but again, the fact that it's been this consistent, you can't just completely toss it.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's worth noting, especially considering, you know, if the GFS is east, the Canadian is west, and the Euro is way west, but the UKMET really hasn't been close. It's pretty far east consistently for the last 3 days. So something to keep in mind. We're going to wrap it up. Let's just finalize some thoughts. You know, what are we looking for tomorrow? You know, in terms of the trends aloft, if you want that big blizzard, and what do you think? What do you think about what we've seen so far tonight from the GFS and Canadian?
I think the biggest thing that we're looking for is a more meridional entry point of the northern stream, which would then result in a cleaner phase occurring a little bit, further west. Because right now the GFS guidance is just so divergent from the Canadian the NAM, and the European model with the northern stream specifically. So that is still the synoptic feature that we're looking for most. Again, the meridional component to the northern stream, and then how, you know, and then how it aligns with the southern stream. In terms of my thoughts on what we've seen tonight, I get, for snow lovers, it's certainly not time for doom and gloom and time for proclamations that this means the European is wrong. The European could be wrong, but not necessarily just because of what Zero Z is doing tonight. But two things is that, again, I do think it was a little unfortunate from a snow lover perspective that the net alignment of Southern Stream and Northern Stream became less favorable for phasing on the GFS, whereas in so many other pieces of guidance, regardless of what the surface showed over the last maybe 24 to 36 hours, the alignment of Southern Stream had been improving. So the GFS took a step back in that alignment of Southern and Northern Stream, which I think reduces the like inevitability of that trend going in our favor. But there still is certainly plenty of room for those trends to go in our favor because of how long the lead time is. And I also think it was encouraging to see the GGEM have a similar synoptic look to the European, and also shows that there could be a middle ground. It doesn't necessarily have to be an all-or-nothing scenario. But my final quick thought is I'd be lying if I'm happy with the 0-0.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, where's your confidence on the European solution being a viable option at this point?
I'm not very confident, but I mean, I'm confident that it's viable, but I'm confident that we should not dismiss it. I'm confident that we should not assume it's wrong.
Right.
But am I confident that it's going to verify as is?
No, that's not exactly the voice of confidence, Doug.
I mean,
just to echo your thought, and kind of close it down, I agree with everything you said, specifically about the Northern Stream being the focus moving forward. I think that's the thing here. We've seen it. You know, I haven't seen the UKMET, but I would just go ahead and assume it's not as good with that Northern Stream. And that's clearly, to me, becoming the focus of this. It's clearly becoming the focus of how this is all going to evolve. So, you know, if you're looking for snow, if you're looking for a big solution, you have to root for that Northern Stream surface to come down quicker and to be, you know, more meridionally oriented and come in and kind of scoop this all up and make this all happen. And so that's really what we have to look for as guidance. Personally, I am not confident at all in European guidance verifying. That might be a little bit, I guess, I don't know what the word is. It's kind of jaded by being burned by the European too amplified in these ranges. So maybe a little bit kind of burned out from it. But I just, you know, I think the fact that we don't have any other guidance that's got, kind of been even in the realm of it in terms of being that wrapped up. Maybe it might be close synoptically, but nothing has been that wrapped up. And so my confidence in that European solution time that we've seen for the last three rounds is very low, very low. And I, you know, while it's a distinct possibility, I think that you have to keep your expectations in check if you're in the near the area, and the surrounding locations and you're expecting or looking at that solution. I think it's really important to keep your expectations in check because it has no other support right now. So that would be the main thing that I want to get across. Moving forward, and personally, my confidence, I think, you know, while we agree on most things, I think my confidence in that happening, Doug, is a lot lower than yours, I would say.
Right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that's true. I do think while there's a lot of points that you and I agree on, I do think my confidence is a little bit higher just because I still think broadly, synoptically, when we kind of take like multiple steps back, there's been more trending toward the European model than vice versa. But it was just disappointing to see the GFS kind of reverse from what we kind of had momentum-wise, if you're being kind of anecdotal again. But, yeah. I mean, so I think
largely still not all that much has changed. I think we're still in a situation for snow lovers where we have to kind of wait. We have some positive trends today. They kind of stopped tonight. But that doesn't mean by any means that the potential is not there. But I think, you know, again, personally, my confidence in that Euro, the big rest of Euro bomb blizzard, verifying is quite low. And hey, you know, if we revisit it tomorrow night and we hop on and we have some other guidance that's in line, you'll hear me getting ready for a blizzard. But until then, I have a hard time really kind of buying into that or betting on that happening. But, the focus is going to be on the Northern Stream, guys. That's going to be the main thing. We want to see that come in more meridionally, more faster, I guess. So. We want to see it come in faster.
it's getting late.
That is what starts that phase. That is what really kind of buckles everything and gets that psychometric plasticity wrapped in. It's definitely the most important thing moving forward. So, Doug, it's been a pleasure. Almost 2 hours worth of chatting about the weather, which is great. Hopefully we have some more to talk about tomorrow. We're going to let you guys go for now. It's been a lot of fun. We really had a great time chatting with you guys. Thanks, everyone, who took the time to listen. Make sure to follow along. Keep hanging out with us on 30 Green Rain. Hopefully we've got some good stuff coming your way tomorrow. We can kind of converge on a snowy solution for everyone. For Doug Simonian, I'm John Hamnock. Have a great Wednesday, Tuesday night, guys. We'll talk to you on Wednesday.